years, Michael Fosberg passed as white. He didn't know he was passing. He was raised in a working-class Armenian-American family. He was with his biological mother and adoptive father. And when he was in his 30s, his parents divorced, and Michael used that opportunity to go in search of his long-lost father. Michael's mother gave him the information on where his biological father and her first husband last lived, and he tracked him down. To his great relief, his dad was very happy to talk to him. But in addition, he gave him some kind of surprising news that would forever change his life. And Michael Fosberg joins us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, I mean, obviously, that moment when you realized that your biological dad was black.
Yeah.
And describe the thought process that went through your mind in the implications of that. My dad is black, therefore I am half black.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I was feeling rather funky at that moment, if you'll excuse the pun, but it was a shocker. I mean, it was absolutely. I remember standing in my little one room apartment in Los Angeles in Santa Monica, and I just had to brace myself against my bureau, and I looked. There was a mirror right next to me. I kind of glanced at myself in the mirror, like, "Wait a minute, did I actually change physical color or whatever?" It was, and then I held on to the phone, and then he says, because I wasn't speaking, I was completely shocked. And he said, "Are you all right?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm fine, I'm good." You know, my mother never bothered to tell me that.
Well, do you have any idea why that no one told you?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was born in 1957, and we lived in Boston in the Roxbury District. And at the time in Boston, it was very racially segregated.
Sure.
And it was
busing era, right?
Yeah, right. And Roxbury was a very, very tough neighborhood, still a very tough neighborhood. My mom was from a very strong Armenian immigrant family, and like many immigrant families, they came to America and wanted you to marry one of your own.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're Irish or Italian or Greek or whatever, they were Armenian, they wanted my mom to marry one of her own. Well, the fact that suddenly she was pregnant by a black man was completely unacceptable to them. And there we were living in the projects in Boston, 57. Her parents disowned her. It was extremely difficult. And then we left my father when I was 2 years old. So When would she have told me? When I was two, I wouldn't have understood it. When I was what, three, four, five, six? When would my son understand that he's half black? And then it's too late. And then by that point, the secret's been buried underneath so much shame and guilt that she just had the difficulty of telling me and just kept the secret my whole life.
Well, what were your own personal theories as to why your mother had been disowned, why there was this estrangement in the family?
Well, I didn't know any of this until obviously I found my father, that all this had happened.
But did you have a reason why we don't go see Grandma and Grandpa, or why we don't have contact with certain people in the family?
No,
why?
My mom remarried when I was 4 or 5 years old. So suddenly I had another father.
Right.
I don't remember really the age from, you know, 2.5 till 4. And then suddenly I had a dad in my life and another family. And then they had kids. My mom and dad had kids. My brother and sister are 8 and 9 years old, younger than me. And so suddenly I had a family. I had a family adopted me quickly before I really had a conscious memory of it all. So I never thought about, oh, where are my other grandparents? Because suddenly I had grandparents.
So you're like a prop on a stage. In a sense, this played out theatrically in your life. Is that where you got the inspiration to do it as a one-man show?
I don't know about that, but I've been an actor my whole life.
Uh-huh.
I've always done this. I kind of jokingly say I've never had a 9-to-5 job. I don't know if that's good or bad, but it's good, thanks.
Yeah.
I read some stories aloud to a group of people. I was writing a book. I'd never written a book before, but I thought, what the heck? I'll try. So I read a bunch of stories to a group of people, and the response in reading those stories was overwhelming. People were laughing. They were crying, and they said, you should be doing this. And I said, yeah, I'm writing the book. And they said, no, you should be performing it. And that's how I kind of got dragged into doing one man show.
I assume that's this book that I'm holding here, Incognito, An American Odyssey of Race and Self-Discovery. And you do a lot of shows in schools. And,
yes.
And as I understand, kids respond really on a very passionate level.
Yes.
And, you know, to a certain extent, we all say color doesn't matter. The color of your skin doesn't mean anything about
right.
the content of your character.
Correct.
But in your particular case, you absolutely had to live by that. I mean, you weren't a different person the day that you discovered that your dad was black. And yet, what did you think? Did you think you had to make changes?
No, I guess.
You look at your record collection.
Well, you know, suddenly all these things came back to me. Like, I own every record recorded by James Brown. You know, I had an afro in high school. I could not get a comb through my hair. I couldn't get a brush through my hair. You know, a lot of black people can understand that, you know. But my mother just used to explain when I asked her about my hair, well, how did I get this hair? She'd say, oh, I think your grandfather had hair like that. And she was referring to her father. And I'd look at him and go, well, he's bald. I don't know what you're talking about.
Southern Armenian. Yeah, right. Eastern Armenian. Right.
But we think about it. Think about President Obama. I mean, we all call him black. Is it just because of the color of his skin? Because he's biracial.
That's
right.
Why
don't we identify him as biracial? Why don't we call him that?
We've talked about this a lot on this program. And, you know, it puts a lie to this notion in America that we all think we know what we are and where we're from. You live in Chicago now, a city of neighborhoods where the Armenians are over here and the Serbians are over here.
But the Polish,
it's all a myth.
Right. Well, and that's what the show is really about identity. How do we identify ourselves and how do we identify others? And I think it resonates on such a powerful level for so many people. And then after the show, I do an in-depth dialogue with the audience and all these different questions come up about identity and stereotypes.
What are the questions, like, especially with young people, what are the questions they ask you?
They ask me all kinds of things. Like, people, they'll always ask, so what kind of music do you listen to? You know, what kind of food do you eat now? And do you listen to rap music? And what kind of women do you date? And,
yeah.
You know, all these different things about that. But also things about, has your life changed since you found out that you're part black? And what changes are those and things? And the answer to that is basically that my life really hasn't changed. I'm really the same. My friends would say to a man, to a woman, I'm the same person I was before. What's changed for me is that I have an opportunity now, a wonderful opportunity to go out and share this story and to get people engaged in the dialogue that doesn't happen.
And yet there's also a change in terms of, I mean, because we're forced to fit into certain boxes. I mean, one census, you mark the box next to white, and the next census. What did you mark this time around?
Don't get me started on the census. So the census this past year had all these different boxes. The question number 8 in the census talked about Spanish origin. Is the applicant of Spanish origin? And then they had a bunch of boxes, Cuban and Latin American and all these different. And then question number 9 dealt with what is the race of the applicant. And then the first box was white. Now,
and?
I got to stop there. First of all, why is it the first box?
We usually
go by alphabetical order, right?
Yeah.
Don't we?
True.
I mean, that's kind of how things are run. So why is it first? Second of all, why white? What does that say about your identity? Do you really identify as just white, or it seems
speaks volumes about American history? That's for sure.
I think so.
Before we go though, I've got to ask you: did your father express regret over never having really known you?
No, you know, there were a lot of things that happened back in the 50s and 60s where black families understood that this was just what happened. When my mother took me away, their family, my father's family and him, understood that this was part of the deal of being a black American.
Wow.
They didn't have those rights. And they hoped, as my grandmother said to me the first time we had a phone conversation, we'd been waiting for you for 10 years.
Wow.
Where the heck you been?
Well, it's an amazing book, and it's also an amazing one-man performance. Michael Fosberg, author of Incognito, An American Odyssey of Race and Self-Discovery. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
So tomorrow on the program, author Amy Chua is creating a firestorm with the essay she wrote in the Wall Street Journal entitled Why Chinese Mothers Are Superior. We're going to speak to Amy on tomorrow's program. Takeaway listeners have already joined the fray on our Facebook page. Listener Tora Blanchard writes, I love the article. My mother was a black Chinese mother, only I was tone deaf and practiced piano for years. To get high achieving children, this is what it takes.
Really?
What do you think? 877-8-MY-TAKE or text the word START to 698-66. Tough Chinese moms tomorrow on The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour wherever you listen to podcasts.